Good morning. I want to thank Pastor Lisa. She happens to be watching online. I know she watches some of our services for preaching for me last week, and for everybody else for stepping up, and Don for even remembering to tell you to sit down during announcements. Ever since he messed up that one time, we're not going to let him live it down. But we had a good vacation. We went to Williamsburg. We went to Jamestown, Yorktown, Virginia Beach, Norfolk. We went a little everywhere. We stayed busy on our trip. And I like history. I hated history when I was in school. Never scored good in it, never was interested in it. But now I am all of a sudden interested in history. So I love this trip. I loved all the history that I learned. And some of that history, not necessarily that I learned there, but some of that history has made its way into the message today. So we're going to begin a two-part sermon, because I'm leaving for another vacation in a couple weeks. We're going to do a two-part sermon called Invitation to Retreat, and that name will not make sense until the end of today's message. We just got done with a series on spiritual warfare, and when I came back from vacation, I was asking God, hey, where are you wanting me to go this week? And he took me to talking about rest. Partly because we have a lot of people going on vacation during the summer. I mean, that's just typically a time that we go and get away and we rest. Kids are off of school. They're resting from school. They're resting from work. And it's just a time for us to really just try to get away from the busyness of life. And I thought it would be good for me to remind our church of God's call for us to rest. It's actually a spiritual practice. Jesus said in Matthew 11:28, come to me all who are weary and heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. Came across this quote in the book the last couple of weeks. It's from Dallas Willard, and it says this: if you don't come away for a while, you will come apart after a while. If you don't come away for a while, if you don't get away from the business of life, you will come apart. You will fall apart after a while. Let me start with a story. Back in 2018, I can remember the year because we had just gotten a phone call about this building. 2018, was probably the last time Sarah and I took a June vacation. We were going on vacation with our friends, and we went to Wilmington area, Wrightsville Beach. And I'd just gotten the phone call before we left about the possibility of us merging with Hunts Plank Road Chapel to move into this building and for this to be our permanent location. And so I remember when they called me, I said, hey, I'm going on vacation. I'll get back with you when I get back. And so we went on vacation. And, you know, it was an all right trip, but I was in a horrible place emotionally, mentally, spiritually. Physically, I was worn out. And I was thinking through the other night, why was I worn out? And I just traced back through the years. 2014, I had started a new ministry at my former church that eventually became Cornerstone Church. 2015, I was pastoring a church and then resigned from the church a few months later. 2016, we started Cornerstone. And 2017 was a year of struggle for our church. It was a year in which we did not grow numerically. So I was down on myself. I was down on our church. I was down on ministry in general. And I was just burning out, honestly. And that all led to going on vacation in 2018. And my friends were playing on the beach. And I was a little bit further back, sitting in my chair with my sunglasses on, weeping. I was bawling my eyes out, and I didn't know why, other than that I was tired. I was depressed. It was not a great vacation because of it. I was experiencing the early stages of burnout, and so when I came back from that vacation, I said, something has to change. And I was reminded of God's call for us to rest. I had not done it. And when I look back at my life those few years, there was something major that happened every year that zapped the energy out of me. That zapped all my physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual energy away. And then the replenishment didn't come because I did not rest. And so I've been there before, and I've got a feeling of many of us, and I know it's a problem in America, that we have reached that same point before where we are just worn out. So I want to, before we get into the sermon today, I want to define two words. Rest and energy is the two words I want to define, because you're going to hear me say some of that today, as I've already said. So rest right now, we'll work on this more next week, but right now we're going to define rest as anything that replenishes our physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual energy. And then to define energy is this: our desire and ability to expend effort or engage in something. So we expend energy in all these ways every day to some level, to some degree. And what I mean by that is that we have to expend effort or engage in these different ways all throughout the day. We have things that are demanding that from us, demanding us to expend effort or energy on something. And so when God began delivering this message to me, he set me up with this example here. I want to use the cup as us and the water as energy. So if you ever came back from vacation, hey, you're rested, you had a great vacation, you feel good, and then you go to work on Monday when you come back and it's a mess at work. At Food Line, our manager, when she would leave, she'd always come back to just a mess. And so because it's a mess, I heard amen. When you come back to a mess, guess what that does? That zaps a lot of your energy, does it not? Like, you're having to deal with everything that has fallen by the wayside throughout the week. You're worn out. Not only that, but you have to unpack everything, which takes a little bit extra energy. You have to get everything put back up. And then, this is how often happens with me, and let's see if it happens with you too. When you come back from vacation, problems start popping up everywhere. So while you were gone, the dryer broke. So you got to work on that. That takes a little bit more energy. Not only that, but the kids have gotten sick from being around a different place, swimming in the dirty, nasty pools with other kids. And now you're dealing with them being sick. And not only that, but your spouse and yourself get into a fight, and all of a sudden, your energy's gone. Now, when you sleep at night, you replenish some of that energy, especially the physical energy, and you're ready to take on another day. But what happens the next day? Well, most work problems can't be fixed in a day. So there goes a lot of that. Not only that, but your kid is still sick, so you're dealing with that, and now you don't have any energy left. And here's what the devil will do. That's exactly when he's going to tempt you. That's exactly when he's going to attack you. That's exactly when he's going to give you these thoughts in your head that you just cannot fight off, because you have no energy to expend, the spiritual energy to expend to fight that off. So you're worn out, you're weak, and you're tired. Now, will you sleep again that night and replenish some of the energy? Yes. But let's say you didn't sleep good and you only replenished just a little bit of energy. Uh-oh. And then work hits you and you're empty again. It's a simple, it's the supply and demand. Your supply is empty and the demand is big. And while you might not use up all your energy on the first day, often that is often what happens. I've come back to church after vacation to a mess. Things breaking everywhere. People who've gotten really kind of off track over the week that I was gone, you know, and just trying to deal with all the drama and all the mess. So that is an example from my life, and it's probably an example from your life. But either way, if you start putting out more days through here, you're eventually going to be pouring from an empty cup. You're eventually going to not have any extra energy to expend, yet the demand is still there. And unfortunately, that's exactly when the enemy attacks you. And that's why I believe many Americans and many Christians fall for the attacks of the enemy. It's because we are not replenishing our supply to meet the demand. So how do we replenish our supply? It's by rest. But because we don't rest, we end up running on empty, which is like an engine running without oil. You're doing damage to yourself, not only to yourself, but to those around you. I got three things that happen when we don't rest. These are my first three points. When we don't rest, we experience anxiety. Our mind begins to go a mile a minute because we don't have the mental energy to fight it off. And we enter into this fight, flight, or freeze mode. And when you enter into that mode where anxiety is controlling your life, everything is perceived as a threat. And you have to make sure that you can handle whatever comes your way. And so also part of this response is that your body is producing adrenaline all day, which drains your adrenals. And because you have adrenaline running through your veins all day, it ends up affecting your sleep at night where you're worn out, but you can't sleep because you have anxiety going all through you. And that leads into health problems. Goes back to the motor running without oil. What happens to the motor? It damages the motor. So when we're constantly pouring out and we're not sleeping and we're experiencing that stress and anxiety, it is proven to create chronic health issues such as depression, digestive problems, headaches, muscle tension and pain, heart disease, heart attack, high blood pressure, stroke, weight gain, and memory and concentration impairment. It's because you're running on empty. And once you're running on empty, it also creates, as we've already kind of hinted at, sin. And then I included social issues in that, because when you sin, it affects other people. We are more prone to sin when we are tired. Have you ever gotten angry at someone, maybe even cussed them out? Not because whatever they did bothered you that much, but because you're tired and cranky. There's some people that would come through my line at Food Line that's just tired and cranky. They're normally nice, but that one day they are just ready to fly off the hook. And it's because they had not rested. Or maybe have you ever faced temptation and yet you didn't have the energy to fight it off, so you chose to indulge in it just to give your mind something to joy and make you feel better in the moment? It's because you're tired. It's because you don't have the mental and spiritual energy to fight off the devil's attacks. And what this does is it creates this cycle. When we sin, it causes more stress and anxiety in the lives of ourselves and in the lives of other people, which creates more health problems, not only for ourselves, but for other people. And it just creates this vicious cycle that could be fixed partially if we rest, if we took time to replenish our energy, which is exactly why God invites us to rest multiple times in Scripture. God did create us after all. So the Creator knows exactly what the creation needs, and what the creation needs, the Bible is very clear, we need to rest. So let's look at some of the principles from Scripture that we can learn from God. First, God commanded His people, Israel, in the Old Testament, to remember the Sabbath. Now the Sabbath, the actual word, means to cease, rest, or stop. And so what He instructed them to do was one day throughout the week, cease, rest, stop. You do not expend any extra energy other than what you have to. Here's what He instructed them to do in Exodus 20, 8 through 11. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you are to labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, Neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days, here's why the Lord says this. He says, hey, I set the model at creation. 6 days, the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy, which means set apart. He had made one day through the week. He had set this in motion from creation. Did God need to rest? No, he's God. He doesn't need to rest. But what he did was he calls us to follow him, so he set the example. He said, you rest. One day throughout the week, you rest. Now Jesus, when we get to the New Testament, we see that Jesus rested regularly. Did Jesus always rest according to the Jewish laws on the Sabbath? No. Jesus went out and he did ministry. So he was confronted multiple times on the Sabbath. They said, Jesus, you're doing work on the Sabbath. You're healing the sick. You're healing the lame. Hey, you're not supposed to be working on the Sabbath. See, what had happened is we took God's command to rest regularly, and they made it into a bunch of these rules and regulations, such as, you can't light a candle on the Sabbath. So what they would do, the Sabbath goes from Friday night to Saturday night, Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. They would light the candle right before sundown so that they did not have to light it on the Sabbath. Nowadays, it would mean you cannot flip on a light switch because that is work. They created all these rules and laws that took this to the next level. And so they're attacking Jesus, saying, Jesus, you're doing work. Why are you healing this person? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? And Jesus said to them in Mark 2:27, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. He, in other words, says that Sabbath was made for the benefit of mankind because God knew we needed it. But we're not to become, it was not never to become a burden that you get in trouble with if you don't obey the rules perfectly. Yet, what we do see Jesus doing is he would withdraw from doing ministry, from healing people, from teaching, to rest and pray. Luke, the physician, records this in Luke 5:16. He says, Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. What's he doing there? He's resting. He's getting away. Now, were there still people that needed to be healed? Was there still people that needed to hear the teaching of Jesus? Especially the fact that he was only doing 3 years of ministry? Were there people who needed to hear that message? Absolutely. But Jesus chose to get away and to pray. And I can tell you this, if God in the flesh got away and prayed, then you should too. If God in the flesh rested, why do we think we don't have to? I believe, I don't think the scripture records this specifically anywhere, but I would bet that Jesus at least got away from the crowds at least one day a week, if not two, to rest. I think Jesus had a Sabbath that just wasn't on the designated day and it wasn't in the designated way that the Jewish leaders wanted. Not only did Jesus set the example for us, but he also instructed his disciples to rest. So they went out and done all this ministry work. They had went out and healed people. They went out, cast out demons. They'd done all this type of work. And at the end, they came back to Jesus in Mark 6:30-31. They gathered around Jesus and they reported to him all that they had done and all that they had taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, Jesus told them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. They've done all this work, and Jesus said, now come away, get some rest. Rest is a part of the rhythm of life that God has created us to live. He told them to literally get away from doing ministry for a little while, to come away with him, replenish your energy so you can go back out and do ministry work. And so we can summarize what the Bible says and what God's instruction is to us is that God invites us to rest and replenish our energy regularly because he knows we need it. Why don't we know we need it? Or why don't we rest? I think we know we need it because we're walking around saying, hey, I'm tired. I'm so guilty of that. Me and Lisa, we still talk once a week, phone call. And she asks me how I'm doing, and 9 times out of 10, I say, I'm tired. Number one, because I just woke up like 10 minutes before. But number two, I am tired. Why is that? Maybe I'm not resting like I should. So I want to close. Don't get too excited. It's like 5 points. I want to close by talking about the reasons why we don't rest. One is simply because of misunderstanding. I don't think we realize that God calls us to rest. I don't think we realize the importance of rest. We obviously understand that we need to rest physically because we need to sleep at night. That's how God created our bodies to work. But I don't think a lot of us realize that we need to do more than just physically rest at night. We also need to rest mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. We need to replenish that energy. We were not made to expend mental and emotional and spiritual energy all day, every day. Many people don't understand that rest and replenishing is a spiritual practice that God calls us to follow. And so my goal is today and next Sunday we'll fix this misunderstanding. The second reason why we don't rest is simply temptation. It's simply because of temptation. Number one, the devil doesn't want you to rest. I already showed you an example why he don't want you to rest. He wants you pouring from an empty cup so that when he demands some of your energy, you can't fight it off because you're worn out and you're tired. You're more prone to sin if you are tired. But number two, we live in a culture here in America that loves work, that stays busy. I don't remember what the exact stats were, but one of the books that I've read in the past talked about how there was a Senate study done like in the 70s. And they had proposed, because of the technology and the technological advances, they had proposed by the year like 2020 or 2000, the average American would only work 20 hours a week. And the reason why was because they thought technology was going to make everything so much better. But what has happened instead is Americans actually worked more than they did at that time. And you're jobs and workplaces want you to work even more than that, always demanding us to stay busy, to continue to work. Back in that time, or even like, you know, we went to Colonial Williamsburg. Back in the old days, if you did less work, you were considered more important because you didn't need to work, basically. But nowadays, the ones that are celebrated are the CEOs that are spending 80 hours a week working, are the ones that are working their tails off. We flipped it. And to me, that is a result of the devil continuing to corrupt the world around us. We have things that are demanding our energy all around us, vying for our attention. Not only do we have long work days, but now we are more engaged with one another than ever. Text messages, phone calls, social media, all these alerts going off on our phone to try to vie for our attention. And I'm just having this thought now. You think about like back in the day before phones, if work needed you, how would they get in contact with you? They'd have to drive to your house or walk to your house to get you to come to work. But now they can just text you. Hey, I need you to come in. Back in the day, they wouldn't have probably walked out there to come get you to work, so you got to rest more. Nowadays, we are so connected that it has made us so much more busy. The world encourages this. Yet, Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 3:19 that the wisdom of this world is foolishness in God's sight. We're not called to listen to the wisdom of this world and we don't have to settle for following it. How many of you remember back in the day when places were closed on Sunday? Show of hands. What was it called? Blue Laws. Okay. There's one store in particular, one restaurant in particular that still does this, and this is Chick-fil-A. What these stores were modeling was the Sabbath. They were taking one day through the week to allow their people to rest, to take time to honestly, back then it was to get the people to church on Sunday. It was to allow people to worship. Now, did they have to close on Sundays? No, because then we're going into Jewish law again, where we've created a law where your Sabbath has to be on a certain day. You're going to hear me talk about next week. Your Sabbath can be whatever day works best for you. Me, it's Fridays. I go from Thursday night to Friday night, and that is my 24 hours of rest. But for Chick-fil-A, their day of rest is Sunday. You know Chick-fil-A can make a boatload of money on Sundays. Like, it would be packed out like it is through the week. It'd probably be even more packed out because all the Christians who are eating that would want to go there after church. Yet, they continue to stay closed, throwing away money. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Chick-fil-A is the probably the top selling, I saw they're the top fast food chain in the world, or at least in America. And I think it's because they're honoring God by giving their workers a Sabbath. You don't see McDonald's doing that. You don't see Burger King doing that. You don't see these other places doing that. A lot of local places will do that. Might not be on Sunday, but it'll be on Monday, or it'll be on Tuesday. You know, they allow them time off, and I think God honors them for that. We were not made to work every single day. Part of this temptation, too, is extra, I think, in our society, in our agricultural and factory-driven society, work is built into you from a young age. You are to work hard. And there's a certain level where if you're not working as hard as someone else thinks you are, then you're shamed because of it. And that leads into the next one, shame. I struggled with this a lot a few years ago. I would feel ashamed for resting, going on vacation, from choosing not to answer phone calls or texts, etc., for taking a day to myself. And this was partially because of my misunderstanding and because of the temptation of the world. But there was also peer pressure that some of you may have experienced as well. I used to have a friend that was a workaholic. He worked his tail off. And because he worked so hard, it made me feel bad when I wasn't working. It made me feel like I wasn't holding up my side of the bargain, of the coin. And because of the way that he would talk about other people who would go on vacations, if it was too many vacations, he would talk bad about them. And if they rested, it made me think he was talking about me the same way. So what would happen is while I was trying to rest, in my mind, I'm thinking I'm being talked about, I'm being shamed behind. And so I felt so ashamed, like I needed to be doing something. And so my days of rest ended up not being very restful because my anxiety was through the roof, which all led to me eventually crying on the beach behind my sunglasses and experiencing the beginning stages of burnout. I'm going to tell you this. Do not feel ashamed for doing something that God has told you to do. Now, you might feel guilty at times if you rest too much because that's called laziness. That's called apathy. But if you are following God's call for us to replenish our energy, then don't let the enemy or any other person pressure you into not resting. The devil, you know, we often talk about, like the example I used over here was him trying to get us to sin after we've drained all of our energy. But part of the devil's goal, too, is the sin of omission. God has told us to rest. And if the devil can get us so busy that we don't rest, he's won. He celebrates that, partially because he knows that he can attack you when you are worn out and tired. He's not going to attack someone that's rested. Well, he is going to attack them, but they're going to be able to fight him off because they have the energy to fight him off. But if the soldier is worn out and tired, they're not going to have the energy to fight. So don't let shame stop you from resting. The fourth reason is pride. And this is where we really get into some of the, I think, the core reasons. I think sometimes we can allow our desire to feel wanted and needed to create pride in our life, that where we start telling ourselves we can't rest, we're too important. I can't rest, I'm too important to my workplace. I can't rest, I'm too important to church. I can't rest, I'm too important to whatever it may be that we choose to not get away. We tend to think that others can't survive without us. And so maybe that results in actually when we are resting, when we are on vacation, when we are taking a day to ourselves, we're still answering the phone, we're still answering text, we're still working just from a distance. I've been there before. And I can tell you from my life, it was because of pride. I thought I was so important that church could not run without me. Proverbs 16:18 says, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. Turns out the Bible's right once again. If you allow pride to creep into your life to the point that you don't rest, you will fall. You will experience destruction because the enemy is going to go after you with all he has because he knows you are weak. And the last reason this goes with pride is control. This is part of that downward spiral that not resting will cause in our life. So when you're feeling anxious, going back to the first few points, when you're feeling anxious, you seek to control everything going on around us because you're seeking that sense of safety. But because you're wanting to stay in control, you're not choosing to rest and ultimately give up control to someone else or ultimately to God. And so because you're not resting, it causes more anxiety, which causes us to want more control with what's happening around us, and it creates that cycle once again. Anxiety, control, no rest. Anxiety, control, no rest. I've been stuck in this spiral before, and it's tough. It will wear you out. For me, when I went on those vacations, I thought I was resting, even though I was still answering phone calls, and I was still controlling things from a distance. I look back at that, and it was partially because of my pride, but a lot of it was because of my anxiety, that I was worried that something was not going to get done the way it should be done. And the key to counteracting that desire for control is simply to trust. Number one, to trust other people. If you're a leader and responsible for an organization or a store or whatever it may be, make sure you surround yourself with good people to take care of things in your absence. I did this last week with Pastor Bernard. I basically said, hey, Pastor Bernard can make decisions. He can make decisions in regards to Liberty, in regards to the remodel. I trusted our project leaders to make decisions there. You know, I was like, hey, I trust Bernard to make that decision. There was a time in the history of our church where I didn't know if I could trust the people around me to make those decisions. But I'm thankful now that I can because I truly got away from work this past week. At your workplace, maybe if you're not one of the higher ups there, trust that work can run without you. You do not have to answer the group text. You do not have to respond to every question. If you are not a manager or leader in your organization, then it is not on you to make sure things get done. So release yourself of that burden. Release yourself of that burden at least while on vacation. Leave that to the ones who are getting paid to lead. That's what I would do at Food Lion. Sometimes they text me with questions, even though I was not the manager. They text me with questions through the week. I'm like, I don't get paid to answer your questions on vacation. Yeah, where's my extra salary at? You can text your manager to ask those questions. Totally remove yourself from work on your rest days and truly rest. So trust in the people around you. And then ultimately, though, the answer to control is to trust in God. I apply this specifically not to work, but to the other things that drain our energy in our life. There are so many things that demand our energy and our attention. We just got done with a series on spiritual warfare. So many battles that we fight, there comes a point where we have to back away from those battles and trust that God's going to take care of things. If you're constantly battling, if you're constantly on the front lines, you're going to drain yourself and you're not going to be able to attack when the time comes to fight back. There comes a time when soldiers have to back off and go rest. So we went to Yorktown, and we saw, just in case you don't know, Yorktown is where the British surrendered, and it ultimately ended the Revolutionary War, won America's independence. And so we saw where the British lines were. There's still mounds of dirt there. We saw where the Continental lines were. And then we drove way back in the woods, it seemed like, to where the Continental camp was, where Washington's headquarters was. And basically what they'd do is they'd rotate them out. They'd send some to the front lines, send them back into the woods to rest. Send them to the front lines, send them back into the woods to rest. Now what would have happened is like a 7-day or 8-day siege. What would have happened if Washington told the same group to stay out there for 7 days? They would have been worn out. They'd been shooting them cannons at themselves probably, not knowing what they were doing. They would definitely have not been able to dig the trenches that they dug. They dug one trench, and then they got closer and built another trench, and then had to go overtake the enemy in these things, encampments or whatever they were called. They wouldn't have been able to done it. Same thing with the spiritual battle that's going on in our life. We've got to take a step back from handling that problem that day and trust that it can wait till the next day because God has it. Trust that we can attack this after we are energized to be able to attack. Which leads me into the name of this two-part sermon, Invitation to Retreat. The truth is that there's always going to be something that demands your attention. There's always going to be something that is asking you to expend some energy. There's always going to be problems in this world. There's always going to be problems at work. And there's always going to be spiritual battles that you're facing. And what God invites us to do is to retreat from all of that. Now, retreat has traditionally been understood as a bad thing. When I hear retreat, I hear a loss. I hear waving the white flag in surrender. But it isn't quite like that. In fact, the military has started to use the term strategic withdrawal in place of retreat, which I think fits better. Looking at history, I typed in, did George Washington retreat? And I knew he did. I knew there's been times where George Washington had pulled the Continental Army, had retreated away from the British. And so I came across an article called George Washington Knew When to Quit, Do You? And I want to read some of this and I want to tell you some of the history there. It details the Battle of Long Island in August of 1776. So if you connect that, we did celebrate July 4th, which is the remembering the Declaration of Independence. So just a month later, here's this fight on Long Island, not long after we declared our independence. Many people don't realize that this battle almost ended the war. and the American experiment before it even really got started. George Washington and the Continental Army, they had defeated the British in the siege of Boston earlier in the year. So George Washington moved his troops to the port of New York, knowing that it would be an important port for the Royal Navy, and so he wanted to make sure that the British didn't get it. Well, the British sent everything they had. They sent 32,000 troops, and they surrounded the Continental Army, the whole Continental Army at the time. And they had decided to dig in for a siege, which basically means they're going to bomb and attack to try to get Washington and the Continental Army to surrender. It would mean that it would be less losses for the British, but it would still ultimately result in the Continental Army surrendering. Same thing Washington did at Yorktown. They dug in for a siege, and they bombarded Yorktown for 8 days, and eventually the British surrendered. So the Continental Army was surrounded. They had the East River at their backs. And it was that night that Washington had a choice to make. Does he fight and take on the British forces and risk the British capturing the entire Continental Army and General Washington himself? Or does he retreat? That night, he chose to retreat. They say it's one of the greatest decisions and one of the greatest acts that George Washington ever made was that he got the entire Continental Army over the East River in the middle of night without the British knowing a thing. Here's what that article said. Washington understood that the long-term preservation of his men outweighed the gamble of a short-term triumph. He recognized that there was no shame in retreating from the field in the face of unwinnable odds. He knew that a temporary defeat was not a permanent disaster. Yet, and the article continues, our society values grit and determination. We often hear the adage, quitters never win and winners never quit. YouTube and social media is filled with life coaches and billionaire founders talking endlessly about never giving up in pursuit of your goals. However, the truth is more complex. Sometimes a tactical retreat is the best choice in order to succeed in the long haul. This guy, I don't think he's a Christian writer, but he's preaching right now. Sometimes a tactical retreat is the best choice in order to succeed in the long haul. How often, church, do you tactically retreat in order to succeed in the long haul? When I read that, God took me to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12, here's what the author of Hebrews says. We are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. Let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Now, Paul, he's compared the Christian life to a race. But here, the author of Hebrews also compares it to race, but it's not a race like a NASCAR race in which you're trying to finish first. This race is more of a marathon. You're just trying to finish. He says, run with endurance. Well, I don't know much about marathon running, but I know you have to pace yourself. And I know that sometimes you may have to stop in order to make sure that you finish at the end. And so the author of Hebrews is teaching us the same thing. You are running a race of endurance. You are running a marathon, and if you don't pace yourself and rest, you are not going to finish. You've got to run with endurance. And then I got to the next verse and it got me excited. He says, this is how you do it. You look to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. He says, you look to Jesus. Well, we already talked about what Jesus did. Jesus told us to rest, and he rested. So he set the example for us. So you have to look to Jesus, the example, the founder, the perfecter of our faith. If he retreated, it means you need to as well. But then we get to this last part here, and this is the exciting part. This is why you can tactically retreat. It's because Jesus is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. You can pull yourself out of the battle. You can pull yourself out of whatever is demanding your attention and let God take care of things. Because he loves you, he cares about you, and he is seated at the right hand of the throne of God, which is the hand of authority. We're in a battle just as George Washington and the Continental Army was. And sometimes we have to choose to strategically withdraw, to rest up, to handle the battles that are to come. And you can do that if you keep your eyes on Jesus, knowing he can handle whatever is stressing you out today. He can handle it. Don't give it one more moment of your attention today if God is calling you to rest. Lay it down at his feet. Tell him you need him to handle it, to take care of it for today. You'll attack it tomorrow. You'll start to work on it tomorrow. But today, you're looking to the one who's seated at the right hand of the throne of God, and you're trusting him with it. So my encouragement for you today, we'll get more into this next week about how we actually rest or how we actually retreat. But my encouragement for you today is to rest, to retreat, if God is calling you to do it. Amen? You can stand to your feet and the worship team can come on up.